Yeah, next we have Scott Reed from University of Michigan on learning what and where to draw.
This work was with Zainab Akata, Santosh Mohan, Sam Tenka, Bernd Scheele, and Honglak Lee. So the motivation of this paper is that we know with GANs, we can train conditional models, conditioned on text, like this caption about baseball and this ground truth baseball image. We can get GAN samples like this, which look vaguely like people playing baseball. But if you zoom in on some particular one of these images and say, look at this white blob here, kind of looks like a baseball player, but we can't really interrogate the model and ask it what it was meant to draw at a particular location. And we don't have a way to control the locations of the objects in the image and re-render the image, which would be a nice thing. So the idea here is just give the generative model more variables to condition on, like location. So one way to do that is just to draw a bounding box in the image and say, I want the bird to go here, it should be black. And here are a few samples illustrating that concept. And then you can also use something like key points. You can see I want the beak in particular to go here, and the, you know, the belly here, the legs here, and so on, and still also obey the caption. So now I'll talk about some background on generative adversarial networks. There was a great tutorial a couple days ago, but I'll just briefly review. So in GANs, you have two networks, a discriminator, D, and a generator, G, that are playing an adversarial game with this value function, V. And what D is trying to do is to distinguish real training data from synthetic data. And what G tries to do is fool D. So it tries to, so given some random noise sample Z, produce an image that when fed into D gives a high score. And we can make these conditioned on arbitrary stuff, like text, for example. So if you have some other conditioning variables like text T, now what D is trying to do is distinguish real pairs of text and image from synthetic pairs of text and image. And again, G tries to just produce images conditioned on some text that convinces D to emit a high score. So it fools D. And the network architecture would go something like this. So you have a caption describing some image, in this case a flower. You encode it through some text encoding model like a character level ConvNet. And you combine that vector with a sample from a noise distribution, like a Gaussian. Now this concatenated vector is your global conditioning variable. And you do several deconvolution layers to produce your image sample. The discriminator would be basically the mirror image of that. So you take the same caption, pass it through the same text encoder to get your text embedding. And you then encode your image, whether it's real or fake, through a ConvNet, merge that with your text embedding and do more convolutions to produce your final output score of your discriminator. And we can generalize this to the case of location constraints. So here, this is the overview. On the left, again, the generator, the right, the discriminator. I'll walk through this in more detail. So for the generator, start with a caption. Encode it again to get a vector. What we do next is spatially replicate this text embedding and then crop to the bounding box. So where you know the object is, you keep those values and then mask out everything else to zero. Then what I do is feed that thing through a ConvNet to get a vector. So this vector here has some approximate spatial information, and it also has information from the caption. We then concatenate that with a sample from your noise. So this now is your global conditioning vector. Again, we do deconvolution layers, but there's two pathways. So the global pathway down here is going to skip all the way to the output. The local pathway, what we do is crop that And then we do a depth concatenation of the global feature map, the local, the cropped local feature map, and the cropped spatially replicated text embedding. And then we do more deconvolutions on this depth concatenated tensor here to get our image. And the discriminator, again, is like the mirror image of that. So we encode the text to get our text vector. We replicate this spatially. We feed the image through two convolution pathways, one global and one local. In the local pathway, we depth concatenate that with our spatially replicated text vector, and we crop it to the bounding box where the object is. We then do more convolutions in both of these pathways, merge them, and then it will produce the score. So here's what you can do when you have this kind of model. So if you have a caption like, this bird has a black head and orange and yellow body, and here's the actual ground truth image for that caption, we can just make up whatever bounding box constraints we want. So we can, in these three samples, what we do is start with a big bounding box and then make it smaller. So we can shrink the bird, but keep its appearance the same. We can translate it, so just push it from the bottom to the top here. We can keep its position fixed, but change the aspect ratio. And we can do this for all kinds of different queries. Now I'll talk about the key point conditional model. So as before, we have the generator on the left, the discriminator on the right. But this time, instead of a bounding box, what we have is the spatial location of a small set of part locations. So for birds, we had 15. We have like the beak, the tail, other bird things. So now I'll walk through this. So, okay, for each of the 15 parts, we have a binary mask. There's a 1 where the part is, and then zeros everywhere else. What we first do is depth concatenate these to get a tensor of these key points, feed that through a confnet to get a vector embedding of that. So that's going to have some approximate information about the pose of the bird or whatever object we're depicting. Again, we encode the text to a vector, and then we draw a sample from the noise distribution, concatenate these three things together. So that's going to be our global conditioning vector. We also produce a binary mask that just says whether there's any part at each pixel in the feature map, which will be useful in a second. So now we take this global conditioning vector. We do, again, two streams of deconvolution. One global that skips to the output, and one local that's going to be masked. So in the local pathway, we do a multiplicative gating with this presence or absence masking tensor. So all of the pixels in the local feature map where there was some part get preserved. Everything else gets thrown away. So you don't need to learn invariance to all the backgrounds in this pathway. Then we do a depth concatenation of the global feature map, this masked local feature map, and also this original key points tensor. So now, so this is the 16 by 16 resolution. And at each of these entries, you're going to have, so look at that fiber, okay. You're going to have a feature corresponding to the global feature map at that row and column. You'll have something corresponding to the local masked feature map. And you'll have, if there was some object there, a one-hot encoding of what that part was. Okay, so then we take this depth concatenated feature map and do more deconvolutions to get our sample. And then the discriminator, what do we do? Encode the text again, form the same kinds of tensors out of these key points as before. We have, again, two streams of convolutions now. In the local pathway, we first depth concatenate with this spatially replicated text embedding, then do this point-wise, this element-wise multiplication with the binary mask saying whether there's a part or not at each location. And we then depth concatenate with the identities of these key points. Then we do more convolutions for the global and local pathway, merge them, and we get a scalar score. So now, once you train this model, you can again manipulate the pose of the bird. So we can do shrinking. In this case, I specify where's the beak and where's the tail, and you can use those to govern the size of the bird. And then you can do translation, shrinking, stretching. And again, this works on many different queries. So now I'll show what happens if you draw samples with different noise. You fix the key points, you fix the text, but you just have different noise. And what we see is that the appearance of the bird, its color doesn't change, its pose doesn't change as we would like, but the background can change a little bit, or in some cases, a lot. So in these other cases, we always see that the bird's color and pose is the same, but we can sometimes observe very different backgrounds. And it works for many different kinds of poses. Some of them are like, a lot of them are kind of boring because they're just sort of facing left or facing right, but some of them you'll see that their wings are spread, so it can handle a variety of poses. Sometimes you want to generate key points, because imagine that you wanted to generate more samples. You don't want to have to write down like the coordinates of all 15 parts. That would be very tedious. So what you can do is just train a GAN that generates key points. So the way we did that is encode the key points as a set of three tuples. So you have the X and Y position of the key point, and whether or not it's visible in the current image. So then you just pack these three tuples into a K by 3 matrix, where K is the max number of key points that you can have. And then we write down a generator network like this. So it takes in some noise, Z, text encoding T, the key points that I just talked about, K, and a switch unit, S. These switch units decide if you just copy key points from the input to the output, or if you want to conditionally sample them. So the way we do the copying is just an element-wise product, S times K. This is just going to bring forward all of the key points that you want to constrain. You're nailing these ones down. And then 1 minus S times the actual sample from some MLP, conditioned on the noise, the text, and the key points that you do have. So during training, I drop out about 90% or so of the key points. I mean, you just randomly pick a subset that you want to condition on. Because I figured that when you want to generate birds, maybe you want to constrain where's the head, where's the tail, but you don't want to do probably more than that. You can, but okay. So here's what it looks like if you generate both the key points and the images. So now, here we have the ground truth image, the text. It's a white bird with gray wings. We see now the bird's pose can vary. And I've overlaid the samples with these little blue boxes indicating where each of these key points are. So we get a diversity now of poses, but the appearance of the bird is the same. Also, the background can still be different because we're also changing the noise. Here's some other samples. Now we can compare to GANs that only condition on text. So here are three ground truth images and associated captions. And here is some earlier work from ICML that trained a text-only GAN that produced 64 by 64 samples. So for this project, we tried to see what would happen if we took a similar approach to generate 128 by 128, and found that it didn't look as good. So sometimes the colors would match the query, but we had a difficult time training the model to produce compelling samples. Maybe some of the recent advances in training GANs would help, but with sort of the conventional DC GAN, we weren't able to get good samples. But we found with the exact same setup, if we just add key points, suddenly everything works, the training is much more stable, and we can get samples that match the colors of the text and that obey the pose constraints. And here's it again with generating the key points. So we found that adding these additional location conditioning variables made the training more stable and allowed us to generate higher resolution images. We also did some experiments with humans data. So there's a MPII human pose data set that has people doing, you know, yoga, golfing, many, many other activities. And we have some text captions that we collected for this data set. This is more challenging than birds because I think humans appear in just a broader variety of backgrounds and different poses. So this is much more of an open challenge, but we have some work on this. So this is a follow-up work I did with Aaron Vandenoor, Noel Kalkbrenner, Victor Babst, Matt Botvinnik, and Nanda de Freitas, where we looked at, can we use pixel CNNs to do location-controllable image synthesis? So similarly, we can take some location variables like segmentation or, again, key points, and encode some text caption. We get spatial feature representations of both, depth concatenate them, do dilated convolutions, and this just produces a spatial conditioning variable that we can feed into a pixel CNN to do conditional image decoding. And here are some 32 by 32 results for birds. Here are some for humans. This is the same MHP data set. And here are some conditioned on segmentations. So these are what you're looking at. These four samples are coming from the model, conditioned on this text, and also a class segmentation. And the two classes that were in this query were person and surfboard. So below these two rows, I've masked out the background. And so like this row shows all the pixels that the model was supposed to show a person. This row shows all the pixels that the model was supposed to show a surfboard. And it generally looks like a person surfing, and we get good diversity with this model. And also this model is nice because it gives us likelihoods. So in conclusion, location conditioning is useful for image synthesis. It gives us an additional layer of control and interpretability of the samples. We found it worked pretty well for birds. Humans are more challenging, I think. And also this approach of location conditioning, it's generalizable to other methods in addition to GANs like pixel CNN. And we have code here. Thank you. I'll play this. See, this is like the UI. So the nice thing about GANs is they're really fast, so they're good for interactive applications. And these were just from me playing around. So some of them work, some of them don't work. But this UI was made by Santosh. You did a good job on that. Any questions?
Hi. Right in front of you. In front of you?
Okay, you see I'll
me? In front of you? Right here, in the back?
Okay.
Yeah, hi. So a couple of questions. Well, first, amazing work.
Thank you.
And so one thing, your model is a bit complicated, and I wonder if you tried something simpler first and that didn't work. And the second question, it seemed like you showed generating key points conditioned on other key points.
Right.
Have you tried generating them from scratch to make a full generative model?
You can do from scratch. You just set your mask all to zeros. There's the switching units. And at training time of your key point generator, you randomly sample switching units. And if they're all zero, that means you don't copy anything. And everything comes from the generator. And your first question, I did try simpler stuff like omitting all of these complicated masking schemes. But I found that to get compelling results and to get these things to actually care about the location constraints, some form of multiplicative gating was really important. So whether it's masking with these key points or cropping, I found that that was a key ingredient. It would be nice to simplify the pipeline. It is a bit crazy, this diagram, but the code's on GitHub, so if anyone wants to take a crack at improving it, that would be great.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Could you say for these images, what is the accuracy that the discriminators achieve? Do they get fooled?
No, not really. So what you typically have to do is restrain the discriminator a bit, because typically the discriminator doesn't. There's techniques like you can stop doing gradient updates on D if D is too good. You can threshold like the average score that it assigns to generated samples to prevent it from sort of overpowering G. And there's a lot of heuristics into this. But as far as I know, all of the work on, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, typically when people train GANs, D always has an easy time of distinguishing real from fake. And I don't think they typically converge to a solution where G really fools D. But if anyone has a different experience, please say so.
Thank you.
Have you considered using an inference network and then using something like your method to do editing on existing images? So for example, you could take a real image and then conditionally estimate the Z.
That would be really cool. I suspect there's some related work on that pretty recently. I haven't tried it yet, but it sounds really interesting.